We can begin.
Are you ready to go back?
Do you want to continue staying here or do you want to go home? Firstly, Seattle would like to thank everyone who made this retreat possible. Everyone who did all the organization, the managers, the people who worked behind the scenes way before this retreat ever began. He would like to thank everyone. And he also thanks all of you. Because you have practiced, and he can see how enthusiastically you all practice. He feels very encouraged by your practice, and he feels it has been very wholesome. At the end of every retreat, he says this to the yogi, so he said he'll just repeat that. Delusion is very happy when we say the retreat is over.
No. Retreat is over, no. Meditation is over.
Or we've finished the meditation retreat,
Retreat are beat it. The other two are beat them.
But Sarah says, although the retreat might be over, we should not stop meditating. Whenever he went home from going on retreat with his teacher would always remind him to continue practicing at home. But he never did. At home, it was home mind, and he just got lost in that. But every time he did go on retreat, he threw himself fully into the practice. So he learned a lot. He was quite skillful at practicing. So by the time he needed to use it in his life, he was able to. Life came to a state in which meditation was his last resort, and he had to take it, resort to that. But when he finally began to meditate at home is when he began to understand the true nature of meditation. Because the mind comes and goes, arises and passes away. He began to understand that if he wasn't constantly cultivating wholesome states of mind and wholesome minds, then the unwholesome would slowly creep back in. If we reflect on our lives and how much of our lives we've allowed wholesome minds to be inhabit us versus how much time we are with unwholesome states of mind. And the balance is often that we have had, consciously or unconsciously, more unwholesome states of mind than wholesome.
Chang is either Shane or Senior. A body of sea senior.
The mind is like a stream, and mostly the stream is a stream of unwholesome. So through that stream, we attempt to row upstream, and we have to row very hard. The moment we stop rowing, we get swept down by the current again. Some of us have been practicing for a very long time, but maybe we're not getting as much from the practice as we think we should, or maybe we haven't changed as much as we could for the better. We may still have our storehouse of a lot of aversion or greed or delusion. And if that is so, it's only because we haven't got to the point that we practice all the time. If we could feel like we do on retreat about meditation as we do at home, if we could bring that mindset of how we commit ourselves to mindfulness on retreat, if we could bring that mindset back home, and if we could sustain that mindset for a long time, he says, we will see big changes. If we're always cultivating mindfulness, then the wholesome will grow. And if the wholesome grows, the unwholesome cannot but grow less. If we're practicing correctly and we're practicing continuously, the mind will change for the better, towards the more
wholesome.
Because the mind is a conditioned process, the mind can be changed. If we feed the right conditions to the mind, then the effect will surely follow. On retreat, we don't have a lot to do, and we try to use that time to explore and learn how to become skillful at how we meditate. And if we then apply that skill back home, we learn different sets of skills. But if we do it over a long time, it can become second nature to us. We spend so much time on retreat, observing the defilements, dealing with the defilements, clearing the defilements, unwholesome states of mind, dealing with them, clearing them. Why, when we go home, do we allow the mind to feed the unwholesome states of mind again? Do we come on retreat to play with the The Buddha has said that the Dharma, the Satipatthana Sutta include, will benefit us both in the mundane and the supramundane. We will learn how to live life peacefully and meaningfully, and we will bring it all the way into the supramundane. Practicing Satipatthana is a means of learning how to live skillfully and meaningfully in life.
So, imagine
So Siaro would like to encourage us to continue practicing when we go home. It's for our own benefit. You will meet with difficulty. You will make mistakes. But Siaro says, don't give up. If you will persevere through all those trials and tribulations, you will come out winning on the other side. Some yogis come and say to Siaro that they find it difficult to continue being mindful at home. Siaro wants to know why. Why would we think that? If we can do it on retreat, we can do it at home. It's in our thoughts and our beliefs. On retreat, we have a belief that we can do it, that we will try. But at home, what are our beliefs? How do you approach practice when you're on retreat? On retreat, you're always thinking about how to practice. You're always remembering when you wake up that this is a day that you're going to be mindful. You go to bed with that mind. You spend the day remembering that you're trying to be mindful. You're always going to try to be mindful. And that's how we spend our days on retreat. Can we do that at home? When you go home, whose home are you going home to? My home, our home, your home. The idea of self is very strong when we get home. Everything we see, hear, touch, and come in contact with becomes something to do with me. He says, so don't think of yourself as going home, just think of going to your home. Think of yourself as just going somewhere to be. Because in the end, he says, when we pass away, when we die, we leave all this behind anyway. We can't take it with us. Clearly, it doesn't belong. So thinking of it as my home gives more room for the defilements to plant themselves. So since the defilements we're going to have to face are stronger, then the practice that we need to bring to it to meet to meet these defilements, these unwholesome states of mind, these unskillful states of mind, the practice needs to be as strong. We need to build it. On retreat, we begin to get glimpses of the principles of anatta. We get glimpses of the fact that everything is conditioned. There are causes and there are effects. Things are happening just as they are. And some of this understanding, when we go home, we should challenge ourselves to see whether the understanding is still up to task. And it's not because he thinks you're not capable. It's because he knows how. It's just that we can't underestimate how capable the unwholesome states of mind can be. When those unwholesome states come up, when they come around, sometimes they can be really strong, and our current practice might not be enough to deal with them effectively. And if they're allowed to remain unchecked in the mind, unseen in the light of awareness, then they grow unknown to us. Anything that's allowed to just be dwell in the mind will grow. So we want what dwells in there to be the wholesome. Like awareness. It's when the wholesome becomes very powerful that it can drive out the unwholesome, but that's through the power of awareness.
I don't need it.
So every day when we get up in the morning, Seattle says, start the day with a purpose, with a commitment, an intention to live mindfully throughout the day. When we go to bed, then it's good to reflect on the day and learn from the day where we are most mindful, where we are least mindful, what we need to adjust, what our weaknesses are, what our strengths are, so that we can capitalize on them. So when we've set the tone of the day right in the beginning, we've sort of cleared a path for the mind, sort of like, okay, it's going to try. And then if we do that over and over and over again, it will slowly start to seep in to our lives. And if we have got an established practice, you know, we've been doing this a long time, and we have quite a lot of continuity in our lives, we will notice that continue to have mindfulness in our lives, we'll notice how we don't even have to wait till the end of the day. As we do things mindfully, at the end of the activities, the mind learns from that what it has done skillfully or unskillfully, and made plans for how to deal with it in the future. And we will still make mistakes, but we can learn from them, so long as mindfulness is present. We meet the same people every day, we do the same work mostly every day, the same mostly routines. Siaro says then, at least for those, we should be learning how to have less and less reactions and more skillful responses in those daily activities. If we're always watching our minds as we interact with people, places, and situations, if we see how we feel, what we're thinking, our views, our ideas, slowly we begin to learn enough that we can be with these interactions, people, places, situations, and have more wholesome responses, skillful ones, and less unskillful ones. With everyone we meet, including our family, if we were always watchful of our own mental activities, we would begin to see the ideas and views through which we operate, our beliefs. And once they are seen, then we have the choice to make a change. We don't have the same beliefs and attitudes towards everyone. We have, for each and every person, situation and interaction, we have different stuff come up in our minds. If the unwholesome reactions are very strong all the time, it's hard for wisdom to flower. So if we can practice to the point that we have more continuity of mindfulness, we know how to maintain the stability of the mind through that continuity of mindfulness, and we've learned lessons about how to do all that, Siaro says, then we have sort of laid the path and the foundation for wisdom to grow,
to arise.
So the retreat is not the only place for us to train our minds to recognize the unwholesome, learn to be mindful and deal with the unwholesome and grow the wholesome, Siaro says. It's actually when we take this training back home that the results and the benefits will be much more real. Because when we have real situations and real unwholesome reactions and unwholesome volitions to work with, it takes a real practice to deal with, to to be prepared to deal with it.
I know ma bwa ne ma a thon yin ne vipadana nyan ni mai nyan phu nyan ya nai ne so da taw paw la ne bwa ne ma a thon yin ne vipadana nyan ni mai nyan phu nyan ni ya nai ne so da yong la ma.
And if we practice at home and we have that, we feel that the Dharma is more and more in our lives, Yara says, we will, our faith in the possibility of true liberation will really be strengthened. There are yogis who still struggle to integrate the Dharma into their lives and have it as part of their lives. Know that this is just a lack of skill. It's not impossible to develop that skill. And all we need to do is persevere and have the right attitude. All of us know how fast the mind works, how intensely it can work. So if the awareness and samadhi are not as trained and fast and powerful as the unwholesome, then we will struggle a little bit, or a lot. So we need to train the mind, train the awareness, become skillful, and we also need to be skillful at facing all the objects that the mind does, the six sense doors. We go on retreat to recharge our batteries, to train, strengthen our practice, learn more, and then we go home and then we apply what we've learned and learn more lessons. So it's like learning boxing. When you're training, nobody throws you a really hard punch. But when you get in the ring, those punches are real, so you have to be fast, and you have to be powerful when you want to throw a punch back. So it's either the unwholesome is in the corner or you are in the corner.
He
says, at first you will be in the corner, never mind, just keep punching. Just keep punching back. Just keep being mindful. And then we'll become very skillful, and then we will be the champion. If we are practicing daily, all day long, always having the intention and the commitment to try and bring awareness to every part of our lives, Siyata says, it will happen. The Dhamma is the Dhamma, Siyata says. It's a law, so it's very, it's a law of nature, so it's very just. If we look after the Dharma, the Dharma will look after us. If we don't look after the Dharma cannot look after us.
Change the And
we can take heart in the fact that we, all the effort we put in, at some point you'll find that it becomes easier. The Dharma sort of comes in, takes you by the hand, and it shows you the way. It becomes much easier. In the beginning, you have to make the effort for some length of time. Some yogis ask him until when they have to practice.
So
the way he sees it, that the unwholesome states of mind are very skillful at taking their place in the mind. And we, it's like musical chairs, we have to build the skill of the wholesome minds, the mindfulness and samadhi and right effort and all, to take those chairs so that we get there first. And he says, when that happens consistently, you'll know that you've got ahead of the game. When you feel like the process of mind that's going on for you is the opposite of the way you feel it is now. He doesn't know how long that will take. Depends on our wisdom, our right efforts, our samadhi, our awareness, our faith.
Sarah
is very confident that everybody is going to go home and continue practicing. And if you find that it's getting hard, you're struggling, don't worry. There's another retreat in which you can start training again.
Charge
your battery, go back home, get in the ring, try again. In the Buddha's time, there were no retreat centers. People just went to listen to Dharma talks, and then they practiced at home. So all we need is a willing mind. And a determined one. We can't be naturally skillful at everything. You know, there will be things that we're unskillful at. We make mistakes. But Sierra says it's all part of the practice. We just keep going through them, bring the mindfulness through them, and learn and learn.
And
he knows how we get swept into our lives because so many things in life are more pressing. Things in life need to be attended to. They're so important.
But
the Dhamma is equally important because although it may be slow in the beginning, eventually if we give it the time, the Dhamma will help us do all the things we need skillfully and easefully. What do you think is more valuable, Siaro asks? How our mind is? What is this, like the state of our minds? Or whether we get the things we need to get done? Which is more important that we're at? Other people are important, but so is this person. Who is more important? What do you think? Sometimes little things happen. It's not really worth very much, but we give an inordinate amount of time and energy and unwholesome and unskillful energy to the situations or matter at hand. Sometimes it's just $5, but we are so upset. He says, then it's like saying our peace of mind is not worth $5. The unwholesome, they don't care. They just do what they want to do. The kilesas, they're ruthless. No mercy. Not even a bit. They'll just do what they have to do. So we have to be ruthless. And we is just a matter of speaking, is a manner of speaking. We represents awareness, you know, sati samadhi panya, awareness, stability of mind and wisdom. The Buddha said, rely on yourself. And yourself is supposed to be a concept, right? A construct. So what is it that he meant when he said rely on yourself? He meant rely on the wholesome qualities in the mind. Rely on the wholesome. Cultivate those. He thinks that's enough.
Okay, yeah.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Does anybody want to ask any questions? No. Yes. Yes.
Tanjung?
Tanjung Pulu. A jumping level.
Oh.
At all times of the day when we are alone, we are not occupied, and you know, like if we're in the toilet, all those moments are formal meditation moments. Siara says we should use it as such, and we should use it as much as possible. In fact, all the time if possible. And he says how long we spend on it does not matter. Because if we are determined to do that, and we do it over and over again, in one day we will gather many, many, many minutes of formal meditation. If you have time in your life that you can set aside time to actually do a sitting practice at some point in the day, you're welcome to do that as well. But not letting go of the rest of the other little bits of formal meditation that we should do. Every minute that we do it, we are accumulating the power of the mindfulness. We go up in elevators, we go up escalators, we have to think of that time as sitting meditation or standing meditation. Or elevator meditation. Otherwise, Siara says, we will be ahead in our minds, we'll be thinking about what we're going to do next.
Singapore, Hong Kong,
Seattle has seen in Singapore and Hong Kong how people are very impatient. They get in the lift and they can't wait for the door to close. They keep pressing the button. Like it would make any difference. Their minds are just not settled. The mind is always in such a hurry, so impatient. And all that sort of behavior that we allow to be expressed increases our stress. Mm. Yes? Okay. How to use the computer, because that really interferes with the continuity. If we're skillful at recognizing seeing and looking, if we're skillful at being mindful of seeing and looking, we can become mindful of seeing and looking when we use the computer. That's a big part of using the computer.
Now, pay attention to me and the tamini, the tini rao bian tini lushin.
Another thing that we can develop is that we eventually get to the point that we are aware of the mind's attention. The mind is paying attention, the mind is being aware. And if we tune into that activity of mind easily, we'll also find that every time we pay attention, mindfulness comes with it.
Pay attention,
paying attention, looking, listening, very similar postures of the mind. The mind is only operating through different sense doors, but the movement of the mind is the same way. And initially, we won't be able to do it. But we must not despair and give up. It's only normal. We're not skillful at, always directing the mind inwards, not skillful at understanding what is mind, and so on. Siara said, when our mindfulness hasn't become natural, we don't know how much attention we need to put outside in order to get something done effectively. So we put too much out, and then we can't be mindful. But it's something that we need to learn from not being able to do it and trying to do it through.
Awareness are moment that you are doing too low to low. She has sick up a low. Awareness are doing too low to low.
But with all that trying, momentum will grow. And when momentum comes, you'll find that the awareness seems to kick in every now and again, becomes more and more easy, although you have to keep the effort up.
Awareness are sick of me in it, a cheap shit, the Bahawa Jar, I mean, a sick of me in it, we saw you. Sick of Halo to Tito.
When we have so much momentum that it's easy to be aware of the awareness.
Aware of our state of mind.
When the mindfulness has so much momentum that we naturally tune into our state of mind all the time, then whatever we do, we'll be aware of that. We'll notice instantly if there is stress or tension or relaxation in the mind, what thoughts are associated with them, and so on. But not in the beginning. In the beginning, we'll have to make the effort to notice how we feel, what are we doing, how we're doing it, and it's a bit slow, and we kind of have to we lose it, we bring it back, we lose it, bring it back, but it'll get easier with time. And you'll notice when it's starting to become more skillful that you feel like you're not having to put so much effort to check. It's becoming natural to check much more easy that it comes in and does it. It's helpful if you have a way to remind yourself every couple of minutes or whatever is comfortable for you, like at regular intervals, if you have a way of reminding yourself to check in on yourself. Oh, am I still mindful? How do I feel? What am I thinking? I'm doing this work. What am I aware of? If you have that sort of a way to do that, you'll also find that structure helps it to settle in slowly over time. Mm-hmm. Yes. And practice. Planning se ka ye chi le. Oh, dalhi ka re ma yan ni pisu paw ma sait tha ma so ro. Da mae planning a lou tin na ka ro lou wa ma be de. Ai ya blu lou lou ma le de. So how to plan mindfully?
Ah, blu lou atwe o ti de a chin lou tha ma ya. Atwe o ayon phin na le tha bi so.
If we become skillful at recognizing the mind is thinking, the mind can plan, and you are knowing that the mind is planning. It's not only the body that's in the present moment. Everything the mind does is also being done in the present moment. You can know that the mind is planning. That's helpful. You can't focus on it very hard. You know, you can't sort of look at it the way you look at something in the body, because then you might find that you can't think to plan. So you have to have a more gentle awareness and allow the mind to plan. Just know that you're in touch with it. The planning does its work and the awareness does its work.
Now, objectively,
that's why we have to practice so much to learn to watch thoughts objectively, or thinking mind objectively.
Now, the question is, any unpleasant feeling, objectively,
we also have to become very skillful at knowing how to observe unpleasant sensations and feelings without getting aversive towards it. That we understand enough that we can know things that are unpleasant in our lives because we'll have so much, that we can watch them in an equanimous way. Not by trying to be equanimous, but by learning. So we do need to plan. Even for meditation, he recommends that we think about it, right? And know what to do. So we do need to plan in our lives, but you can know that you are planning. And ideally, we would be planning with a wholesome state of mind. In a wholesome state of mind, we'd be planning without anxiety or greed or hurry or stress. That would be planning because we know how to and we do it peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's been really helpful for me to view thinking as an object.
Different
mind.
Different function,
different function, different mind.
So because our experience of mind is not actually like one mind at a time, Because it's said that in 1 second, some gazillion minds arise at the same time. Not at the same time, a gazillion minds arise, but it, to us it feels like it's all there. That's why awareness is able to know thinking. And if you find that when you look at thinking mind, it disappears, just know that at that point, it's because like the mind is focusing on the thinking mind, so the mind can't think. You know, whatever you look at that's thinking, that thinking stops because you kind of look at it so strongly. But it can be that, you know, there are thoughts that go on even if you're looking at them. And you feel like there are two trains moving together. One is thinking and one is being aware. So if we don't focus too hard, we can see it that way. So the skill is learning to see that thinking mind is an object. And when the mind recognizes that, when it sees that, when it understands that, the mind will be able to see it, to observe thinking mind. Sometimes yogis come to see him, he says, and they ask him, Siaro, this being aware and thinking at the same time, can you teach us how to do that? They say to him.
Remember
that we don't need a whole lot of energy to be mindful in any moment. So we don't need to put a lot of focus or that sort of power into the moment. We want to gain the strength of continuity. There was a yogi who always was confused when Siaro talked about knowing the thoughts. And one day Siaro said to him, can't you hear your thoughts? He was like, yeah. He was like, yeah, so know what you're hearing in your thoughts. And then the yogi got it. So there's different ways that we can know our thoughts. Our thoughts are always talking to us. All sorts of dialogues and monologues, he said. We do know the mind. We see it in action so much. We just need to recognize that we are knowing the mind, you know. We know when, you know, things start bubbling up in the mind. We know when the mind is planning and doing things. We do know.
Often
we are already aware of our thoughts, and then we think I have to be mindful, but we are already aware of our thoughts, and we think we have to be mindful, and we pay attention, and that stops the thought. But actually, before that was enough. Because there is awareness of the thoughts. So Siaro says that's why vipassana is just about knowing what's happening. If we know, that's enough. Yeah.
Sometimes I hear people say that Sai Das teaching mindfulness of mind, the third Satipatthana.
Mm-hmm. Chittanupassana.
I think I've heard Sai Das say he actually teaches all of them.
Yeah. The question is, some people say that Siaro is teaching Chittanupassana, but Siaro always says himself that he is actually teaching all four Satipatthanas, all four foundations of mindfulness.
ပါလို့လူတွေအဲ့လိုပြောလဲဆိုတော့ဒီစိတ်အကြောင်းများများပြောလို့စိတ်ကိုများများစိတ်ရဲ့တဘာဝကိုများများရှင်းပြတယ်စိတ်အကြောင်းကိုများများဆွေးနွေးတယ်နောက်ပိုင်းကျရင်တတိထားနေတဲ့စိတ်ပါရန်တိလာတယ်ဆိုတော့အဲ့ကြောင်လူတွေကစိတ်တဏှုပ္ပန္နလို့ပြောတယ်အမှန်တော့တစ်ခုတည်းမဟုတ်ပါဘူး
We see from our own practice that we're watching foundation of the body, we're watching our feelings, we're watching things happening in the mind, we're also learning to recognize the nature of things. So that's all four foundations of mindfulness. But the reason that some people feel like Siaro is teaching Chittanupassana is because Siaro talks so much about the mind. Because the mind is involved in everything. It is the condition for so many things to arise. And then he talks so much about noticing how the mind is being aware, how the mind is working, how what attitude is in the mind. He talks so much about the mind so that we understand our practice, which is being done by the mind. And that's why people feel like Siaro is teaching Chittanupassana.
Now the kua, how do we emphasize that? I told that sick, go go be all, swing new.
Yeah,
I told that sick, John, go be swing new. I told Mugu, go be swing new. I told that sick, pin new, sick, go be all.
Yeah. He talks so much about the mind because we use the mind to practice. So if we did not understand the mind, we would not become skillful at using the mind to practice. So it can feel like he's talking about the mind a heck of a lot.
Dipadhana Dhamma. What is it?
It's a young... Say a young pion, a look kanzadar.
He
said something in Pali. I'll just ask him. Bale atapi
tamasano satima
pajano satima. So that's something in the Satipatthana Sutta. It talks about bale wariya thera no.
Atapi sura wariya.
Yeah.
Swami ne wariya. Tamasano sura nya. Satima sati. Ai tong khu ai chang athot de saip ba ma ai a lo lo wa me lo pyo.
And those three words refer to right effort, virya, and wisdom, and sati. And Sadhu says all of these happen in the mind that's meditating. So if we don't talk about the mind that's meditating, then, you know, how do we meditate? It's not about what we observe, it's how we observe. Yeah, and since we're learning to recognize these qualities at work, these functions at work, we can't not know or not recognize the mind at work. So then again, it feels like there's a lot of Chittanupassana going on. Or seems like. Because when there is when it is wholesome in the mind feels joy. Right? PT is a wholesome state of mind. That's joy. We're happy to practice, happy to do what's wholesome. You want to practice, you want to do service, you want to be generous, you feel good about it. That's wholesome. Of course it feels good.
Oh, that's
greed, that's attachment.
Na loba akudo wa pyo la piti akudo tu
de garan loba kanzalo makang lo mati lo
loba akudo sei tu jena aji da pyo le so la tu loba ne pyo la tu pin man ne kudo ma pin ma tu ja mya mya pyo li tu a shi li be.
Greed is an unwholesome state of mind, and greed comes with its attendant grasping and all of its work. Sierra says when something is unwholesome, it is energy draining for the mind, whereas when it's something wholesome, it actually brightens the energy of the mind and makes the mind lighter and more energized. So that's how you can tell.
That's
all?
Time
to go home. Now you're going to go on stage, Siada said. at home. You're going to meet your opponents, the real ones.
May the beneficial results of our practice together this time, this 2 weeks, may this be offered to support the welfare, the happiness, the liberation, the freedom of all beings everywhere. And just a reminder about shaking out the zabutons and stacking them and the zafus in the